The next matter this morning is case number 70002, State Department of Business and Industry Financial Institutions Division versus Dollar Loan Center LLC. Mr. Van Dyke for the appellant, Mr. Riley for the respondent. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Lawrence Van Dyke on behalf of the appellants. I endeavor to reserve a few minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor. At one time or another, Your Honors, everyone in this case has adopted the position that the state has in this case, and that is that if a lender issues a subsection 2 loan, that the lender cannot sue on that subsection 2 loan. Dollar Loan itself has acknowledged that multiple times. It did so in 2011 in front of the legislature. It did so again in 2015. It did so in the complaint in this case, and its counsel did so when he argued the case in the court below, repeatedly, and I'll point that out to the court. And the reason that's important is that I think that demonstrates that it is the most natural interpretation of Section 1. It's the most consistent with its text. It's the most consistent with the legislative history of Chapter 604A, and it's also the most consistent with the purpose and policy behind why Chapter 604A was enacted, which, as Dollar Loan says in its complaint in this case, acknowledges, it's to stop the debt treadmill that attracts so many Nevadans. And Dollar Loan's latest interpretation does nothing to stop the debt treadmill. In fact, it encourages the continuation of that debt treadmill. In fact, I would argue it's the only thing.
How is it enforced like that in the event of a default? What's the state's position on that?
How is subsection a default on a subsection 2 enforced? It isn't judicially, Your Honor. It could be, I think it was designed specifically not to have that sort of enforcement mechanism, if that's what Your Honor means. I think, and to be clear, we're not taking the position, because there's been some unclarity, but I hope the honors are clear from the briefing, but there's certainly many other ways you can enforce a default on the original loan. If you do a subsection 1 refinance under subsection 1 of 480, you can enforce that judicially. It's only if a lender opts to do what I think you would call a subsection 2 refinance, where you issue one of these new subsection 2 loans to refinance that you cannot.
Why would you ever issue a subsection 2 refinance if it renders the whole thing unenforceable?
Yes, Dollar Loan says that makes no sense. And I'll acknowledge, when I first came to this case, I that was my first instinct too. But I'm not a lender, but I do know, I can't tell you why lenders do what they do, but I can tell you that they do it, and they did it before, this.
But is there any way to collect your money, or would you just be giving it to the person and saying, I hope you pay me back?
Well, they would repay it voluntarily, Your Honor. In 2005, Buckley, Assemblywoman Buckley, who presented this bill,
is no remedy. You just are giving the money, and you have no remedy at all to get your money back.
So relying on them, on the debtor, to pay back the money. You're right. There is no judicial remedy.
Well, in the legislative history, though, the reference to the remedy was the avoidance of an adverse credit report on these kinds of loans, and that was the concern, the offset. So if you were going to proceed with a subsection 2 loan, you were working out the resolution with the borrower at pretty significant interest rates, and if that didn't pan out, the exchange for the suit was an adverse credit report.
And to put it the other, I agree, Your Honor, and to put it the other way, if you read the whole, all of subsection 2, and this is consistent with the legislative history, this is sort of a rebuilding credit type mechanism. You report when you're required as a lender to report the debtor's behavior. You're also required to go into credit counseling. And so the whole purpose of this is some of the lenders, we know from legislative history, Barbara Buckley in 2005, this is in the appendix on page 268, she said, this is the bill sponsor, I have worked with lenders, some of whom do not sue people at all, and have never assessed these kind of damages. And then MoneyTree, this is again 2005, came and testified, this is appendix page 279, and said, MoneyTree is one of the companies that does not sue, and it states in our loan agreement that we will not take civil action. And there's similar testimony in 2011 and 2015 from people who were there and involved in the process, that they had done subsection 2 to as a mechanism to facilitate this type of program that I think Justice Hardesty said, which is, a lender doesn't have to do this, but there's some lenders that sort of had the approach that we will call it the kinder, gentler approach, but an approach where we are trying to help somebody rebuild their credit, and you're hoping that these people will reciprocate and pay, and that's only if they want to do that. If they don't want to do that, they can go for the subsection 1 type refinance. They don't have to do a new loan refinance at all. They can sue on the original loan. But if they do this, I mean, I want your honors to be clear, you know, you can remember that the terms here, you can have a loan for anywhere like, any as long as it's over basically 5 months, you can have a loan for 5 months to infinity here, the term, and it's up to 200%. If you have a loan for 1 year at, or 5 years, actually the way the math works, it doesn't matter if it's 20 years, 5 years, 1 year, once the debtor, if it's a 200% loan or a 199% loan, once the debtor has paid back that, has paid six payments, the lender is ahead, right? So even if the debtor at that point doesn't pay back the rest of the loan, the lender has got their principal money back after six payments. On a 3 year loan, they've got an extra 17-18% at that seventh payment. So, you know, it's a calculated risk. It's a risk that lenders can take. And again, they only need to take, you know, MoneyTree in the briefing asks like, oh, this takes away something, you know, the ability to sue. And part of it's confusing because if you read the briefing, it's almost like they're arguing that they can never sue on any type of loan. That's not the state's position. It has never been the state's position. It just can't sue on a subsection 2 loan. Because if you can sue on a subsection 2 loan, Chapter 604A does nothing to stop the long-term debt treadmill. I mean, it really is the exception that destroys the entire rule of Chapter 604A.
Mr. Van Dyke, isn't there some ambiguity in terms of interpretation, in terms of what the Attorney General has stated, the Department of Business and Industries, and the final financial institution division in terms of the application?
I thought you were going to ask if there's some ambiguity in such a thing. I don't think there's ambiguity in paragraph F. I would agree that there may be some ambiguity in the FID's letter. At least it seems like it's been interpreted differently by different people. It seems like if you look at the legislative history, Dollar Loan and maybe some other people interpreted the FID's 2009 letter as saying you can't sue on anything ever, or that you can't sue on, say, a subsection 1 loan. I think you can read the FID's letter as being more narrow than that, as being consistent with the Attorney General's position. Now, and I think, of course, the Attorney General's letter is crystal clear and excellent authority for this court to rely on. But I do think that the Attorney General's letter, I think it does hopefully make clear that we're just talking about a subsection 2 loan that you can't sue on. But in any event, if there's to the extent there's ambiguity in those letters, that is certainly the position that we've taken in this litigation. It's just a subsection 2 loan. It's been difficult because we keep saying that. And in the district court below, I mean, the district court, I think, was unclear about that. You know, when Dollar Loan, when it presented its brief in October 2015, that was the first time, by the way, when it presented its brief, when it made the condition precedent argument. Before that, in its complaint, if you look at it on appendix page 3, paragraph 10, it clearly says, 480, this is Dollar Loan's complaint, 480 bars a licensee from commencing a civil action upon the default of a loan that's been renewed, refinanced, or consolidated under 480 subsection 2. There was nothing about the condition precedent argument in its complaint. And in October of 15, it provided that argument to the district court. At the same time it did that, in that same briefing, Dollar Loan said to the district court, it presented the FID's position as saying that paragraph F, that I'm going to quote, completely bars the licensee from commencing any civil action, any being underlined and bolded or italicized, against any defaulted debtor on any deferred deposit loan or any high interest loan. So I think the district court below was confused and thought it had to adopt one of these two extreme positions.
At the end of the day, Mr. Van Dyke, I'm not sure there's an ambiguity in the statute. There seems to be an ambiguity in the multiple questions that have been posed surrounding this issue. The question that initially is outlined in the FIB letter, even the question, with all due respect, in the Attorney General's letter, the way the issue is phrased in the LCB letter, even the complaint itself in this case is pretty broad. I mean, what question are we answering here? If as one looks at the complaint, it's a little bit hard to see what deck relief Dollar Loan was requesting. But if the question is limited to what does 2F do?
Yes, and I need it
simply.
And the answer, I think, is that 2F, what 2F does is it says you cannot sue on a subsection 2 loan. Once you've entered into a subsection 2 loan, you can't sue on that loan. I don't think you'd be able to sue on the original loan anyway, because you've used the proceeds of the original loan to pay that off, but you can't sue on that either. And if you refinance that subsection 2 loan with another subsection 2 loan, which is, I think, the only way you could refinance it, which Dollar Loan is done, as you see from our plywood, you can't sue on that either. That's what subsection 2 does. And I agree, Your Honor, I do think there has definitely been confusion. Where to lay the blame for that confusion, I'll demur on that, but there's definitely been some confusion.
Well, I wasn't trying to lay blame. I'm just saying that as the whole issue has progressed over the past almost a decade, the question seems to float between the parties giving the answer, and even in the district court, as you know, the complaint was broad, then the briefing seemed to change the question, and I just wanted to clarify from your perspective, and I was going to ask Dollar Loan to do the same in this proceeding. What question are we answering here?
Absolutely, Your Honor. You're getting right to the heart of it, I think. And the question is, what does paragraph F do? And paragraph F bans you from suing on a subsection 2 loan. And Dollar Loan, as I understand it, Dollar Loan issues subsection 2 loans at least some of the time, if not all the time, not as a refinance of an original high-interest loan, but as an initial loan in itself. I think it bans that, too. Any subsection 2 loan, it bans suing on that loan. That's our position. And the main reason I wanted to point out some of this ambiguity in the past is, Dollar Loan's current argument, they focused on this condition precedent argument, especially since they have got this order from the district court. And I just want to point out that, their current argument is that it's unambiguously clear that it is only a condition precedent. And I just think that can't be true given that Dollar Loan has taken the position like in 2011, 2015 in the complaint, and then before the district court, it took that position also repeatedly. Counsel for Dollar Loan repeatedly told the district court, I would urge the court to look at the appendix on page 470, 471, and 474, where Dollar Loan counsel repeatedly said, I'll just quote from 474, "And again, we're not trying to say that when someone has agreed to extend a loan that doesn't satisfy subsection 1 that you can go ahead and sue." So Dollar Loan's counsel at the argument below wasn't even taking the condition precedent. So I don't think you can argue that that's the unambiguous interpretation of this provision. So whether
your position, the statute unambiguously, subparagraph 2 unambiguously supports your position.
Yes, number one, that's our position. And number two is even if it is ambiguous, then you go to legislation.
Where would you find ambiguity in here? And I realize you're arguing against your first position, but...
No, but if we find ambiguity, I think the purpose, which we all know, is to keep people from falling into the debt treadmill, and also this legislative history that we cite to in our brief is something that the court would look at if there's ambiguity, and I think those clearly support the position, the interpretation. So whether there's ambiguity or not, I think, A, the state doesn't think there's ambiguity, we think it supports our position, but B, if there is ambiguity, I think the legislative history and the purpose support the state's.
You have about 2 minutes left. You
might reserve your time.
Riley?
May it please the court, counsel, thank you. Section 604.8.480 sub 2F does not contain any mandatory prohibitory language of any kind. There is no, as I describe it, thou shalt not sue language. And it would be very easy to put that language into the statute. You can simply say a licensee who loans money pursuant to this section may not commence any civil action or alternative dispute resolution.
I don't want to be rude, Mr. Riley. I just, after reading the complaint, you heard the conversation I had with Mr. Van Dyke. What is the question your client was asking the district court
to answer. Could you just articulate that?
Yes, it's whether 604A.480 bars it from suing on a defaulted loan.
Okay, now 480 includes two sections. So you wanted an answer to section one, and you wanted an answer to section two?
Well, as to section two, really, subsection two. And I think,
as you recognize, I presume, that under section one, if you make a section one refinance, you can sue.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So your question is really limited. If we make a subsection two loan, can we sue?
Yes, and here's the source of the confusion. Counsel raised it in his argument. Some of my client's loans are refinance loans, and some of them are new loans. Those are all Section 480 loans.
Well, let's read the language in F. Does not commence any civil action or process of alternative dispute resolution on a defaulted loan, that's the original loan, or any extension or repayment plan thereof. Wouldn't that include a subsection 2 loan, which is what its purpose is?
No, Your Honor, because...
At least one purpose.
Well, the language earlier in the statute, if, is very significant. When we have the language if, followed by a long list of conditions, and that's what these are conditions precedent. You can only address conditions precedent at the time you make the loan. I wanted to finish my point earlier. The Financial Institutions Division says that it's improper to make a Section 480 loan as a new loan. That is not the way the FIB has regulated Dollar Loan Center dating back to 2007 and possibly even 2005. So this may be a position that it's taking for the first time in this appeal, but that's not the way my client has been regulated over the years. The Section 480 loan, as they describe it, the Section 480 loan that my client makes, sometimes is a new loan and sometimes it's a refinance loan.
Are we bound by that regulation or are we bound by the statute?
Well, it's your domain to interpret the statute, Your Honor. I just wanted to raise that point because it's frustrating. I think we're talking over each other a little bit, and that's the source of the confusion, and I think that is the reason why.
You would acknowledge that the heading under 604A.480 in the statute is entitled, as you noted in your complaint, Limitations on Exceptions to the Renewal, or words to that effect.
I also noted that the word new was added in 2007 to the statute, and I think the court has said before that headings are not determinative of the interpretation of the statute. I would like the court, when I say read the statute as a whole, I mean read it as a whole in light of the entire chapter, because that's important. We have a number of other statutes that relate to the right to sue, even in these instances. 604A.410 requires my client in every loan agreement to provide a disclosure to a client that if they default, that my client must offer a repayment plan.
Mr. Riley, to get the benefit of 480 subsection 2, you have to not commence a civil action. I mean, you can't loan under subsection 2 if you're going to commence an action.
That's not what it says, Judge, because the language should read, if that's your position, the language should read, a licensee who refinances or finances under this statute shall not commence a civil action. I'd like to compare this to NRS 604A.445. Yeah, 455, pardon me. That's the title lender statute, okay? Title lenders' remedies are limited. They may not go to court, and it specifically says that. It says the sole remedy is repossession of the vehicle and sale. And then it has a carve-out that says, well, a title lender can go to court if the loan was procured by fraud. There's nothing like that in the statute.
Mr. Riley, if you can sue on a subsection 2 loan, how does that promote the objects and the intentions of the legislature in enacting this legislation to stop the debt treadmill? Because this person who takes on this Section 2 loan is now signed a note that is for a period longer than 60 days at an interest rate higher, probably the highest,
no,
that you can legally loan.
Much lower, actually. Title loans, payday loans are usually above 200%. This is actually capping an interest rate. But I will tell you that the filing of the lawsuit stops the debt treadmill. And if you have...
It says less than 200%. I'm sorry, 199%. So for a percent. Okay, call me a liar. But whatever. The bottom line is... The bottom line is that it's still a loan that is for a period much longer than the initial payday loan and longer than what a Section 1 loan would permit.
Correct. And a lender, under these circumstances, this is an unsecured loan, right? Mm-hmm. Because Section, I think it's 435, precludes security of any kind. So if you can't sue and if you can't act on security, what's the incentive of the lender to do? But go back to that borrower before there's a default and say, well, let's refinance, and let's refinance again, and let's refinance again, because that's the only thing you can do.
If I can interrupt you one second, Council made a point that was interesting, that essentially within six or seven payments, the lenders made whole because of the excessive interest rate.
Understand your point, and again, because if you have no right to sue, you have that incentive to continue to refinance, and you may not get the whole thing back with the next refinance, but you'll get part of it, and you'll get part of it back with the next
refinance. But isn't that part of
and we don't
policy
want that.
Behind
and we don't want that. We
refinancing these loans.
Right.
You know, you take a chance, you take a risk, and it was indicated that in the legislative history that perhaps the consequence to the borrowers that they have an adverse credit score.
Well, let's put it this way. If the FID is correct, then each and every one of us could go outside and borrow a certain amount of money from a lender without having any intention of repaying it. We could completely defraud Dollar Loan Center or any other licensee, and there would be no recourse for it.
Well, that's not correct, because you can sue under Section 1. You don't have to extend another loan under Section 2. The trade-off in Section 2 is that you forfeit the ability to probably go get an empty judgment from someone who can't pay it by getting the opportunity to extend and get more payments out of the payee. So there's a benefit to Dollar Loan in proceeding under Number 2. You get some money instead of an uncollectible judgment. Because if there was money, you could get them in the first instance and get a judgment that you could collect on.
But you could refinance a loan under subsection 2 without any intention of repaying it. And that's an absurd result, frankly. And even a title lender gets to go to court when it's defrauded. And so why doesn't my client, who doesn't...
But it sounds like you're relitigating a remedy that the legislature resolved when it enacted this legislation.
I disagree, and I don't think there's anything in the legislative history that specifically gets to this remedy. And there's been a lot of talk about going to the legislature after the fact. We had conflicting opinions, one from the Attorney General and the FID, and the other from the Legislative Council Bureau. I'm not saying that either one is entitled to any deference,
you would agree with me, though. Those letters don't all answer the same question. Those questions are phrased differently.
I don't think the call of the question is entirely different, although they do go off into different... They certainly take different approaches. I definitely agree with you there. That's why we came to the court. We weren't trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. This is an appeal on a Chapter 29 proceeding. We asked for an interpretation of the law from this court. My client offers subsection 480 loans. Some of those loans are new loans. Some of those loans are refinances. And I think that's, so when the FID says you cannot sue, well, that's because my client is, that's its product. It's a subsection 2 loan.
Can you help me with the text of your argument, the text of the statute, and why you read the statute as you do? I understand what you're saying about absurdity, et cetera, but textually, what's your reading of subsection 2? As I understand it, you're saying because it speaks in the present tense, does not commence any civil action or process, that as of the moment it makes this loan, that's that moment, point in time, going backwards, not forwards. Is that right?
Yes, and also if you were going to prohibit the right to sue, which is
I understand your second point, but still
it's a substantial right.
They're leaning a lot on the tense, on the verb tense.
Yes.
Does not make, correct?
Leaning a lot on the verb tense, and also...
But doesn't... This statute is a puzzle, but subparagraph C talks about if the licensee reports information relating to the loan experience of the customer to a major consumer reporting agency. That's articulated in the present tense, but doesn't that contemplate post-transactional reporting? In other words, post-extension reporting. So the present tense used there is looking down the road.
No, it contemplates a present act. This is the sort of thing that
gets done simultaneously. So you think that reports information relating to the loan experience of the customer to a major reporting is only as of the moment the extended loan is given, not after the fact?
But yes, I think, because and I think this does get done simultaneously.
Okay.
The reason why is because you could have a lender do one of these loans and then just not follow through.
So to follow up on Justice Pickering's point, subsection E is not prospective?
No, it's not prospective. It's something I believe that's done at the time. At the
individual
moment.
Is not expected to continue participating in services dealing with counseling agencies going forward?
I do not. We don't have anything in the record. And frankly, Judge, I don't know if that's something that gets done prospective.
So to be clear, every single one of these subparagraphs, and I don't mean to jump on Justice Hardesty's lines, but your reading of this subparagraph 2 is that all of the lettered paragraphs under subsection 2, they're articulated in the present tense, only refer to the time leading up to the date of the extension and the date of the extension itself. They don't operate prospectively at all.
That's correct.
That's your reading of this whole statute.
Yes, because these are boxes that need to be checked at the time that the loan
is
done. And that's the way, I mean, that's the only possible way that you can
And that's apply. Your textual argument for why your reading should carry over the state's reading.
That's one of my textual arguments.
Okay, and then the other textual arguments are what?
The absence of a mandatory prohibition.
Thou shalt not.
Well, and the comparison to the title loan prohibition under Section 455. When you look at that, I mean, the legislature stopped the remedy.
But what about paragraph 1 seems to say, this is the only way you can do an extension in this context. And then paragraph 2 says, well, you can get out from under paragraph 1 if you do paragraph 2. So...
And none of those, and neither of those rules say, notwithstanding NRS 604A.415.
Which is the general
right to sue. And NRS 604A.415 significantly does not reference 604A.480 at all. And you would expect to see that, notwithstanding. I mean, the legislature does that all.
It's a poor collation, I agree with you, on... because it says if a customer defaults on a loan, the licensee may collect the debt, but only in a professional, fair, and lawful manner.
Right, right. Loan, by the way, is interpreted.
But why couldn't this be a professional, lawful manner, as if you're not going to go under one, you don't get to collect it except for agreeably?
Well, under that statute, which incorporates the FDCPA, you're allowed to file a lawsuit. And the one point I wanted to make is loan is interpreted broadly. It's defined broadly by the statute to include really any loan that's made. And 604A.480 does not, again, does not undercut that at all. So it doesn't limit the definition of a loan under Chapter 604A. It refers to a refinance loan and a new loan. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Riley. Ben Beck, you have 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think Your Honors are getting right to the nub of the issue on this last colloquy here about whether or not there's an ongoing obligation. And, you know, the dollar loan's position seems to turn out, well, does the language say there's an ongoing obligation? But, I mean, you can't read these paragraphs of subsection 2 without recognizing that they do, many of these paragraphs, whether you call it condition precedent or not, they have an ongoing obligation. The subsection D, right to rescind for 5 days. You can't enter into a loan and then rescind it 2 days later, and then say you can't rescind it 2 days later, that carries on an obligation for the debtor that they have to give that person the right to rescind for 5 days. I mean, the same thing I think is true for the 200% maximum, the 30-day repayment. You can't enter into a variable rate loan like we have on our credit cards. Say we're going to start with 199, but we can jack it up the day after you enter into a loan. These are ongoing obligations. So it just doesn't work to consider these, to characterize these, I think, as condition precedent and not have an ongoing obligation. I think that's
paragraph C reports information. Is that to be a fait accompli as of the moment the extension is made, or is that an ongoing in the state's position?
I think the purpose of that was to be able to allow the person to be a good citizen, pay off the loan, and then you report the effort to rebuild their credit. So I think that's another ongoing obligation.
Okay. You disagree with his reading of the
I think so. The one thing that puzzled me was, why isn't F a subpart of paragraph A? So why isn't it one of the terms of the loan? I think it was that these lenders they agreed that they would never sue on the loan, but they don't want it to be explicit as one of the terms of the loan because they're worried that then people are reading through their and go, oh wow, I don't have to repay this. So it's kind of a loan that depends on an asymmetrical information. To your
reference to other sections in the statute. Specifically referencing the right to sue.
And I think there is a right to sue on all loans except for where that right is specifically taken away, which it is down here. So I don't have any problem with that language.
There's 418 doesn't have a cross-referenced exception for 480.
But 480 itself says you can't sue on a 480 loan. So that's not that.
Argued below in any event? The other section?
The arguments were, I'll just answer your question, Your Honor, if that's all right. I think there just seemed to be like a cross, especially, I would urge the court to go look at the appendix, well, the argument below, which is at 470-ish in the appendix. Talk about two ships passing in the night. It's just really odd, and I don't know why it was like that, but a lot of these things didn't seem to be brought up, so I hope that Your Honors will clarify this. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Van Dyke, for your arguments, please dismantle this panel. Thank you very much.